Well, boy, that was a great talk that Kate gave yesterday, didn't you think? Thanks, Kate. Because I think that probably many of you, just like me, have been very deeply concerned about climate change and its effects on the future. And so her talk was really the best talk I ever heard about this, really. For me, it just hit home. And if you know Kate, you know that I think she mentioned this in passing, that she's been concerned about this her whole life since she was a young person. Because, you know, people have been talking about this for 40 years, right? And somehow her talk expressed all those decades of loving and passionate concern in a way that gave me, at least, and I bet also you, a wide perspective and a great hope. And a well-focused Dharma lens to see through. And this is, I think, what we really need now. Not only us, but I think the whole world needs some lens to see this through, because so much of the way that we think about this is fearful and small-minded and full of blame and confusion and despair, and we really need another way of holding this in our hearts. And so I felt like her talk gave that to me. So that was really great. And maybe she'll, it is recorded, but maybe she'll make it available somehow in writing. You missed it, but you'll hear it. You can hear it later, yeah. So the other day we were talking about a joyful, continuous, wholehearted effort, the kind of effort that we are learning to make during Sesshin. And I think I mentioned that Dogen has a long fascicle called Continuous Practice. So this morning I would like to share with you what he is saying, especially at the beginning of that fascicle, where he tries to explain what he means by continuous practice. So here are Dogen's opening words. On the great road of Buddha ancestors, there is always unsurpassable practice, continuous and sustained. It rolls round and round as the circle of the way, and it never ends. Between aspiration, practice, enlightenment, and nirvana, there is not a moment's gap. Continuous practice just rolls on and on. So I think he means this as a kind of quite a literal image, that he sees practice as a wheel rolling on and on, a spinning circle that isn't going from here to there, but just going round and round and round forever. Maybe you could envision the spinning tire of a car in motion, spinning so fast that when you look at it, it looks like it's not moving. It looks like it's somehow luminous and vibrating, but not moving. The spinning circle rolls endlessly on, yet is always in the same place. It defies our notions of linear space and time. So that within this rolling circle, all moments are one moment, are the same moment. spinning and spinning, time collapses into each moment. So the whole eternal archetype of the Buddha's career, which is also the archetype of our practice, each one of our practice personally, collapses into one moment. From the moment of aspiring to awakening and leaving home to the time of diligent practice toward awakening to the moment of awakening itself and then final complete nirvana. As he says, there's no gap in time between these various moments. They all spin together in the circle of the way, rolling on and on throughout space and time. So, for us, for instance, we could feel that the beginning of our practice is already the end. That the effort that we make at any point in our being on the path includes the whole of it. So in some deeply mysterious way, practice really is continuous. It has always gone on. It started in you before it began. And it goes on in you even after you leave this world. Because it's never cut off. And it never ends. I hope once in a while you've had a sense of how true this is. Maybe as I'm saying it right now, you're knowing what I mean. Maybe you feel like, oh, I've always been doing this. Sesshin kind of can bring on this feeling, especially around the fourth day. You can feel like, did this ever begin and will it ever end? And hasn't it been going on this way forever and ever? You can really feel, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 10, 20, 50 years, who knows how long I've been spinning on this Dharma wheel. I was born for this. It isn't even something that I'm doing. It isn't some activity that I decided to take up. I was just going along, minding my own business, and practice scooped me up and swallowed me and spit me out all at once, rolling on and on, time rolling on and on. Our life begins and ends and rolls on and on. And I'm saying this, but maybe as I'm saying it, you're feeling it. Or maybe you were feeling it before I even dreamed of saying it. He goes on, this being so, continuous practice is undivided, not forced by you or others. The power of this continuous practice confirms you as well as others. It means your practice affects the entire earth, the entire sky in the 10 directions. Although not noticed by others or by yourself, this is so. Undivided is a word that often appears in Dogen texts. People sometimes translate it as undefiled or pure. But it really means whole and all-inclusive, without any inside or outside. And it's very hard to grasp this notion of Dogen's. Because if we say something is whole or undivided, actually it's still divided because it's something, not something else. So it's divided. It might be whole within itself, but it's divided from all the other things that it is not. So in this sense, things, all things, just by being the things that they are defiled, divided. So here Dogen means something beyond this, something beyond anything. He means totally undivided, totally all-inclusive reality, nothing outside of it. It's really the opposite of consciousness. Because consciousness is division, right? Consciousness is discrimination. Here's a mind, and here's an object of a mind. It's conscious. I am conscious of this or that. Consciousness is division. There's a sentence in Suzuki Roshi that expresses this thought. He says, "What exists beyond consciousness actually exists. And it is there we have to establish the foundations of our practice." What an astonishing thought. What exists beyond consciousness actually exists. And it is there we have to establish the foundations of our practice. Amazing. We have to establish our practice on what is beyond consciousness, beyond discrimination, and therefore beyond perception, beyond thought, and beyond feeling. And that's what really exists. Everything else exists only provisionally, only temporarily, only impermanently. That is the only thing that actually exists. And yet, this tentative, provisional existence, this world of coming and going, this world of me and you, is the only world we can live in. So when we live in it, without a real basis in what is beyond consciousness, its inherent division will cause us to suffer. And from this simple and wonderful thing, that we live in a world we can see and feel and love, comes all our suffering and the whole tragic catastrophe of being a human being. But continuous practice is something else. Continuous practice allows us to root our lives in something beyond division, beyond the impurity that is this world. So we can look at the divided world and feel ourselves in it and see at the same time the rolling wheel of continuous practice. We human beings should congratulate ourselves. We're so smart. We're really good at discrimination. We are the champions of discrimination. And the smarter we are, the more discriminating we are. So really smart people have critical minds. They can see this is different from that. They can see how things fall short, how they could be better. They can see how they themselves fall short, how they themselves could be better, how we could be better. And we could say the same, see the same thing about other people, how they fall short, how they could be better. And we can see this about institutions, ideas, machines, and so on. Ah, I see how that could be better. So this is good. We can be better people. We can have better ideas, better machines. But when we can't see beyond this, it's a world of suffering. When we see the world of consciousness, but we don't appreciate the world beyond consciousness, we suffer and there's no relief. And our better machines will not help us. When Dogen says that continuous practice is not forced by you or others, he is saying that when you think you decide to practice and make effort in practice, or when others do this, this is not actually what's going on. There is no forcing practice. There's no grunting and groaning. There's no coercion. Practice just flows and unfolds beyond what we think we're doing. Of course, we make effort, as we're doing this week. We do our part. We show up. We come back to the breath. We take our seat, period after period of zazen. All day long, we keep trying to pay attention. And this is good. This helps us to step beyond our narrowness. But what is actually taking place here is something beyond us. And I really feel how true this is. People often ask me, how did you get involved with Buddhism? And I have a good story, which I repeat. It's sort of true. Oh, I did this and that, and I was here and there, and so forth. But I can't really explain the real story. I can't really say to people, well, practice was always in me. Before I ever heard of it, it was always in me. And practice in me used my various thoughts and attitudes and desires and conditioning and the various chance circumstances of my life to guide me to what I needed to do from the beginning. And yes, from the outside, it looked like I was making choices and different efforts and so on, but that's not really what happened. I know better than that. I did this and that. Practice made me do it. And then the first thing I knew, kaboom and kazam. I blinked my eyes and I turned around three times, and the next thing I know, here I am with all of you. And I'm talking. And I'm wearing Buddha's robe. And I'm sitting in Buddha's seat. I have always been doing this. I have always been rolling along in just this way. And that's why it is so true that practice itself confirms me and it confirms you. Practice is the seal that sanctifies our lives, that makes us whole. Now, in saying this, Dogen doesn't mean Sesshin, or what we would think of as Zen practice, these are only activities and events in a divided world. When he says that continuous practice confirms me and confirms you, he means that life itself, being itself, is continuous practice. Life, as in life and death, which is the only kind of life there is. Life, as in all-inclusive time. When you think about it, what is ordinary life if not an endless quest for legitimacy? Did I do enough? Am I a substantial enough human being? Am I a good enough person? And how do the other people see me? What do they think about that? And how do I see me? What do I think? Well, we could all have our doubts. But here Dogen is saying, no, none of that confirms you. Continuous practice is what confirms you, not your good character or your good deeds. Of course, we should develop good character, and of course, we should have good deeds. But not because that is what confirms us. And then he says, and he doesn't mean this, I think, as an exaggeration or an extreme statement in any way, but simply a bare statement of fact. This being so, your practice affects the entire earth and the entire sky in the 10 directions. Everything is changed forever because you do continuous practice. So the questions we might have about whether practice is working for us, changing our lives in some way, or not changing our lives, or how it's changing our lives, this is a small matter. Hardly really worth paying attention to. Is practice doing you any good? Like, why would you even notice or care? Such a small matter. Because everything is changed forever. Everywhere. Because of your continuous practice. So let's not forget that when we contemplate the world's overwhelming problems and our place in that. Of course, we are objective creatures in an objective world, so there are things we can and must do according to our talents and our inclinations and our karmic positioning. We have some duty here. But also, we can never forget that our practice ultimately matters. Its effects are ultimate. Then he says, well, but this may not be noticed. Probably, I think he means, cannot be noticed by you or by anyone else. Even so, it's the way it is. And we so much want to know and experience things. We want to see the results. We want to feel our strength and our effectiveness. Of course we do. We're humans. We're conscious. We want what is good. We want the satisfaction of knowing that we've lived a life well spent. But continuous practice and its effects are beyond all this, beyond what is knowable or measurable. And yes, maybe once in a while we can feel it. We can feel the truth of this. Maybe once in a while, we could have a wide, open, and beautiful experience of it. And when we do, it's so confirming and so great. But it doesn't matter. Even if we feel the wholeness of the universe and the endlessness of time, that would just be something that appears in consciousness, inspiring, and soon gone, like everything. But most of the time, that's not the way our life appears to us. Most of the time, we hardly notice what's happening. But it's still true anyway. You don't have to get enlightened to be enlightened. And practice in the end will show this to you. And so, finally, you can relax. Accordingly, he says now, going on, accordingly, by the continuous practice of all Buddhas and ancestors, your practice is actualized and your great road opens up. By your continuous practice, the continuous practice of all Buddhas is actualized and the great road of all Buddhas opens up. Your continuous practice creates the rolling circle of the way. By this practice, Buddha ancestors abide as Buddhas, don't abide as Buddhas, have Buddha mind, and attain Buddha without end. So Dogen was a person who had a deep faith in the Buddha and all the Buddha ancestors in the past in India and China. And he inherited this faith from his mother, who died when he was still a child, and who was a very devout Buddhist and wanted Dogen to be a priest. So Dogen revered the Buddha as a great sage and as a mythical person, not bound by ordinary space and time. So he's telling us that our continuous practice doesn't come from us. It's not something we've done. It comes from the Buddhas and ancestors. They open up the great road of our lives. And then he says this the opposite way, because of course it must go both ways, right? The continuous practice of the Buddhas and ancestors depends on us all. And it is we who open up the great road of their lives. And of course, this is completely true. Through our practice, we give life to the Buddhas and ancestors, just as their life gives life to us. But again, when he says Buddhas and ancestors, he doesn't just mean the various Asian figures that we think of as the Buddhas and ancestors. He means all of our human ancestors, from our parents and grandparents and beyond. It is literally thanks to them and the passions and sufferings of their lives that we're here now. In the way that we are here now. And it is thanks to us that they literally remain alive in the way that they remain alive. Throughout space and time, human beings have always done this for one another. We open up roads to travel on. Great, open, inviting roads. We become Buddhas and non-Buddhas. We turn the continuous wheel of Buddha Dharma, which never ends. Because of this practice, now Dogen going on, because of this practice, there are the sun, the moon, and the stars. Because of this practice, there are the great earth and the open sky. Because of this practice, there are body, mind, and their environs. Because of this practice, there are the four great elements and the five skandhas. Continuous practice is not necessarily something people in the world love. But it should be the true place of return for everyone. Because of the continuous practice of all Buddhas of the past, present, and future, all Buddhas of the past, present, and future are actualized. And the effect of such sustained practice is not hidden. Therefore, you aspire to practice. Yet the effect is hidden. So you cannot see, hear, or know it. Understand that it is just like this. Hidden and not hidden. Revealed and not revealed. So it's funny, you know, our practice is like right here in front of us and totally hidden at the same time. We have Zazen. It looks like Zazen. We have robes. We know that we have them because we sewed them. We have incense or maybe some flower petals. We have the other practitioners. We have our shared commitment, our shared understanding, all of which we can see and we can feel and we can understand. And these revealed things cause us to aspire to practice, and they give us a path and they warm our hearts. And here in this realm of time, we can say, at this point I was not practicing, and then at this point I began to practice, and somewhere along the way, maybe at the very beginning or maybe a little bit later on, I really saw how great practice was, and I awakened my aspiration for practice. Everybody comes for some reason, right? Probably not the actual reason, but some reason that appears in our lives that makes sense to us from wherever we were at the time. But after a while, you get it that whatever you thought you were doing is not what you're really doing. Whatever you thought you came for is not actually what you came for. What did you really come for? You don't really know. But somehow, it's the most real thing. Or maybe not. Maybe it doesn't even exist at all. As it is not divided by what is hidden, apparent, existent, or not existent, you may not notice the causal conditions that led you to be engaged in practice that actualizes you at this very moment of your not knowing. The reason you don't see it is that becoming conscious of it is nothing remarkable. This is getting hilarious almost, right? So now he's telling us, not only is continuous practice both revealed and hidden, it's also both existent and non-existent. Which is why you probably couldn't have noticed the causal conditions that brought you to practice, and that even right now are opening you up, even if you can't yet feel that. And even if you did see it, the fact that you are seeing it all the time, because the whole world is constantly showing you the absolute truth you need to see, hardly registers in your mind, because it just looks like the ordinary world. It doesn't look like something spectacular. This ordinary world, that's such a pain in the butt and giving you all kinds of troubles. And that you just take completely for granted. It's not remarkable. Because you can't see that the world isn't just the world. And you can't see that you aren't just you. And yet, there's no mystery. Get up in the morning, brush your teeth. Go to the Zendo before dawn. Dogen says, investigate in detail how this is so. And that's what we're doing this week. Okay, but what about when you're not investigating it? What about when you're crashing blindly about in your life, making a mess out of everything? Here's what Dogen says about that. Even if you might try to ignore it in order to hide a crooked intention and escape from it, this ignoring would also be continuous practice. To go off here and there looking for continuous practice appears similar to the aspiration for it, but it is like leaving behind the treasure at the home of your true parent and wandering poor in another land, wandering through wind and water at the risk of your life. You should not discard the treasure in your own house. While you were searching in this way, the Dharma treasure, you'd miss it. So, don't slacken, even for a moment, your continuous practice. So even when you ignore continuous practice, it's still continuous practice. Even all these others, people over there, out there somewhere, who we are feeling superior to, because look at all this great practice we're doing, and what are they doing? It appears they also are doing continuous practice. You have never met a single person that is not practicing with you. And everything in your life is and has always been essential. Everything has always been continuous practice. You don't have to go around here and there looking for it. You do not have to find the best teachers and the most potent meditation retreats. The jewel was always sewn inside the lining of your coat, and you just didn't notice it. Even though you're putting your coat on and off, taking it off every day, it was always there in your possession. So don't worry about going to sesshin or listening to talks or seeking out teachers. I mean, do that, please. I'm happy you're here. Don't get me wrong. But you don't need to do that. That's the point. You really, really don't need to do that. Because it's already there. If anything, the only point of doing all this is to remind you of what's been the case from the beginning. Continuous practice, which is your sacred human life. So in the rest of this very, very long fascicle, Dogen then brings up example after example after example of our Chinese and Indian ancestors whose lives are evidence of continuous practice. And he goes on and on with many examples. And at the end, he brings up the example of his own teacher, Rujing. And he tells this story about Rujing. So Superintendent Zhao once invited Rujing to the capital to give a Dharma talk. Rujing went. And at that time, Zhao presented him with 10,000 silver coins. And Rujing thanked him and said, "Well, I just came here to give an ordinary Dharma talk, and I am dedicating the merit of my talk to the well-being of your late father," because it was he invited him for a memorial talk, you know, for his father. "But I don't need these coins. Thank you very much, but I must decline." And Zhao said, "But Master, I am a relative of the emperor. And everybody around knows me and respects me, and I have a lot of wealth. This is the memorial day of my father. If you accept this gift, you're going to give him a lot more support in the next world. Please accept this offering." Rujing said, "I cannot refuse your request, but let me just ask you a question. When I give my Dharma talk, do you understand it?" And Zhao said, "I was so delighted to hear it." And Rujing said, "Oh, I am so honored that you feel that way. Thank you very much. And the only thing I wish for is the well-being of your father, wherever he is. But could you please explain to me what I said in my Dharma talk? Because if you can do that, I will gladly accept this silver. But if you can't do that, please keep the silver." So Zhao said, "When I think about it, your composure and movement were excellent. And Rujing said, "Well, that's what I did. How about what you heard?" And Zhao hesitated. And Rujing said, "Your late father's happiness is already assured, and your gift should be left to his decision." And then he said goodbye. So this not receiving wealth and merits and fame and all that is one of the big themes of this fascicle. It's the opposite of continuous practice. And it would appear that in Dogen's day, just like throughout history, there's a lot of bad religion. Monks seeking fame and gain, and especially donations. Then as now, unfortunately, religious establishments think it makes sense to align themselves with temporal power and therefore end up colluding in the establishment of really bad policies. And it's really, to me, such a shame. Religion, which is such a human treasure, and such a good thing, so important for us, so necessary for us, perhaps now more than ever, becomes such a bad thing. So oppressive sometimes, not only politically, but personally. How many of us can tell stories of our feeling unmet, unseen, told what to do by our early religious upbringing? Religion is supposed to be a force for expansion and love. And so often it isn't. So Dogen went all the way to China, a very demanding journey to find good teachings. And he was deeply disappointed. He found that the teachers he met in China did not have real respect for the Buddha way. He found that their path was too casual and too worldly. This was the great Song Dynasty, the high point of Buddhism's fame and importance in China. So Dogen was greatly relieved when he finally met Ru Jing, whose practice he could trust. Ru Jing, who emphasized Zazen, continuous Zazen, and nothing else. So in this story, Ru Jing is not so much testing or disrespecting Superintendent Zhao as much as he is wanting to teach him that it is continuous practice and only continuous practice that matters. Zhao is impressed with Ru Jing, impressed with his Dharma talk, impressed with his presence. And Ru Jing is saying, you know, that doesn't make any, that's nothing. That's not the point. The point is, Inspector Zhao, Superintendent Zhao, your own continuous practice. And if you don't see that, then my being impressive to you is of no use whatsoever. It's just another exciting night among the stars. Zhao says to Ru Jing, please accept my offering for the merit of my father's journey in heaven. How could Ru Jing possibly refuse to accept the offering with that kind of coaxing? It seems almost cruel that he won't accept it. And throughout history, priests accept large donations from the wealthy. And they think, well, this is for the Dharma, though. My extensive networking and my publicity and my hobnobbing with the rich and famous, it's really all for the Dharma. I'm not doing this at all for myself. But Ru Jing gently and politely refuses. Your father doesn't need the help of this meritorious act of donation. And neither do you, and neither do I. I have dedicated my practice, my Dharma talk, to your father, so I really care about him. Take the money and do something really good with it, okay? When I think about this story and Ru Jing, it makes me think of my own teacher, Sojin Mel Weitzman, who was a lot like Ru Jing, actually. Simple, unambitious, unadorned, straightforward practice. He's been sitting at the Berkeley Zen Center every day for more than 50 years, doing continuous practice. Nothing special, nothing fancy. And he himself is not special or fancy. I have often told the story of the first time that I met him. I went to Berkeley, and the first thing I did when I went to Berkeley, I'd never been there before, the first thing I did is look up Zen in the phone book. Remember phone books? Big fat things that you gave to children to sit on at the dinner table so that they could be high enough to reach the table. They had phone books, for those of you who don't know. Many, many pages, very, very thin paper, if you've never seen one. Anyway, I looked up in the phone book, Zen, and I found the address for the Berkeley Zen Center, and I went there, and it was, at first I didn't recognize it, was just this Victorian house with a tiny little plaque on the door that said Zen Center, and Mel was in the front yard sweeping up leaves from the yucca and monkey puzzle trees. There were two trees in the front yard. And I asked him about the center and the schedule and who was the teacher. And he said there was no teacher there, there was just a priest. And I figured he was the gardener. He seemed like a nice, quiet gardener type. So then later I went back when it was time for Zazen, and they had a big steep, it was in the attic, the Zendo, a big steep attic, so very steep stairs. So you walked up, and the priest was sitting right at the head of the stairs, so when you walked up, you first could see the priest's hands and mudra, and then a little bit more and more of the priest's body and more as you walked up the steps. And then I saw his face. It was the gardener. I was so surprised. And he had such a simple dharma, which moved me immediately, as if I always knew it, as if it had been in my heart for a long time. Just sit, then have breakfast, and wash your bowls, and everything is right there. That was what he taught us. He would give instructions on how to eat. He would say, I still do this, he would say, always go back to your first bowl. Eat a little bit, eat from the other bowls, and go back to the first bowl, he explained. That was his teaching. I was Mel's second Dharma heir. His first Dharma heir, the wonderful Blanche Hartman, if you can find her book, it's a wonderful Dharma book, just like Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. It's full of short, beautiful teachings. She was his first Dharma heir. She received Shiho a few months before me, and she is now gone, as are several others of Mel's Dharma heirs predeceasing him. He has a lot of Dharma heirs. It's actually quite extraordinary. My wife Kathy is a Dharma heir of his, along with probably more than 30 other people. It's actually quite something to have this many Dharma heirs. It is so much trouble and time and effort. Really, the amount of what it takes to pass on the Dharma, just like the objective stuff you have to do, is so troublesome and time consuming. It's like a feat, some kind of a feat to have had that many Dharma heirs. So Mel is now 90. And he just found out that he has bile duct cancer, which is why I guess I don't usually talk about him, but now I'm talking about him because he's very much in my mind and in my heart pretty much every day now. And he's decided not to do the super fancy operation that they have that could be done for this, or seek any other kind of aggressive or heroic treatment. He would just like some plain, simple, continuous, ordinary treatment. It began yesterday, his treatment, and see what happens. He would like to continue to do as he has always done, and he's still doing, going to Zazen, study a little bit, play Bach on his recorder, walk the dog, he loves his dog, cook a little lunch, a little green tea. He doesn't know how long he'll live, but he feels okay about it. Anyway, he says, I'm 90, so how long am I supposed to live anyway? When you're 90, are you thinking what am I going to be doing in 30 years or 20 years? You don't think like that. So it's does it even make any difference? So he's perfectly fine. He's been through some difficult things along the way here, but then he gets better and he's okay. Life and death is the great matter. So it says on the Han. Without death, we couldn't live. And without life and death, there is no continuous practice. Our life goes on and on forever. And the great road stretches on. And the wheel of Dharma turns and turns. Once in a while, in the silence, you know that this is true. So, thank you very much for sitting Sesshin, and please, let's continue all the way up until the end. Thank you.